Hello, Jaywalk's Brain here.
Hey there, it's your penis. How you doing?
You know, hanging in there. How about you?
Not so good, Brain. Not so good. Been a long, long time. About 8 months to be exact.
Oh yeah, sorry. You know how it goes. Pandemic and riots and everything. Just haven't been feeling myself lately.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because all I have been doing is feeling myself.
Look, buddy, I'm doing the best I can. It was a rough end of 2019, and then the virus.
The virus? Your ancestors were fucking during the Black Death, and you can't get up off your fat ass to go on a date?
Look, we went over this before. Fat reserves are very important. If there was a global famine and I couldn't get food, we'd both die. I'm not going to put our safety in jeopardy because you want to show off abs like you're the situation.
Look, you might call the shots, but you'd be nowhere without me. And if I don't get some attention soon, things are going to start getting dark. I'm the only thing keeping us off the edge of a very dark chasm of despair and degeneration. You need to do something. Maybe some new clothes that aren't from Marshalls to start.
Hey, Marshalls is my jam, okay? I love Marshalls. They have smart clothes at smart prices. Don't you dare talk shit about Marshalls, you fucking cock. Look, I know I need to try harder and get out there. I'm going to pop back on this dating app and start chatting up some sevens.
Fives. You're going to find a nice five or even a four. 8 months, Brain. 8 fucking months.
Fine. You're right. I'm sorry. I let you down this year, penis. I'm going to try and make this last half count. I'm going to try and make this last half count, though. Is there anything I can do now to cheer you up, though? How about that porn video with that chick who looks and sounds like that girl in high school we had a crush on?
Yes, that would be nice.
Tab's already open, my little friend. Hi there. Welcome to Lower Your Expectation. This is episode 4. I hope that everyone is starting their week off all right. Very tumultuous times right now. I want to start off by apologizing to Jerry Seinfeld for ripping off his joke about talking to his penis. In fairness to myself, I started coming up with that yesterday and didn't even think about it until I was like halfway through the idea, and kind of like I was talking about last episode with Kimbo the Lion about how, you know, almost every scenario has been done, kind of like with the Simpsons did it joke they do in South Park. So many things have been done, so many scenarios. I'm sure Jerry Seinfeld wasn't the first person to come up with talking to his penis, but I do want to give him the credit. In case someone goes, hey, wait a minute, that's just like what Jerry Seinfeld did. I know, it kind of was. Mine was a little bit dirtier, and it wasn't like a chess game. It's kind of funny with comedy, though, is that it's like an art form that you really can't cite and sample from that much. You know, you can't have like a joke. You can't be on stage and tell a joke and then say, oh, well, you know, this was from so-and-so, and just repeat it. Like you can do like with a book or something, or like a news article, or even in music, you know, you can do samples. There's no borrowing jokes. There's only stealing them. And there's actually a lot of cool videos I've watched about this, YouTube videos, and I actually heard about, I believe it was Planet Money had a podcast about kind of the art of joke theft, how it's such a weird thing because ideas are not copyrightable. Like the idea of talking to your penis, you can't put a copyright on that. You can't go to the copyright office and say, no one can say a joke about their penis unless they send me money. But you can if it's a specific like string of words. If it's a script, then it's sort of becomes different. Like if I just read that Seinfeld episode where he talks to his penis, that'd be a lot different. But just simply the idea itself can't be copyrighted. And there's a lot of gray areas with that. I'm sure you've heard about Carlos Mencia getting called out by Joe Rogan. I need a bell on this show every time I mention Joe Rogan. I am going to stop mentioning a certain substance that I enjoy that's not alcohol, that I will be giving myself a mild shock if I bring it up again. I've made that decision because this cannot be the 420 show. I have more of a life than that. So it's like I was saying, it's interesting with jokes because you cannot copyright the idea. And so therefore it's kind of a wild west about enforcing joke theft. You really do need someone like a Joe Rogan just to literally come on stage and say, fuck you, you're stealing people's jokes, and then shame them. Pretty much the entire policing of the industry is based on just shaming people who get caught. Because that's all they can do. And if you get caught stealing jokes just outright, then, you know, you can be blacklisted in the industry, and just overall people are going to think you're a total asshole. So they kind of have to police themselves. And especially with writers, I've heard a lot about like writers going to LA comedy clubs and being like banned because they would just sit back, like the writers for Mad TV and stuff like that, because it's too easy to just sit there at a comedy club all night and hear people's awesome ideas and not take something back home. Whenever I can finally get back out to go to comedy shows, I'm going to really try to keep that in mind and like really keep it in the back of my head that you cannot like steal jokes. You can steal the joke makers. You can steal the comedians. That's my plan. My plan is to start going to these things, start going to more comedy shows so that I can like find people to maybe collaborate with me on this, or I can collaborate with them with ideas. So I'll take the comedian, but I will not take the joke. You can rest assured if you see me out there, I'm not going to be writing down ideas to put in this podcast. Also, in the beginning of the show, I had the band Ween, which is one of my favorite bands. I was thinking about this last week about how there's some bands that are like joke bands that are better than the joke, that they're actually like, they start off kind of funny and then are really talented. Probably the best example is Tenacious D. They're just really good. Like if you listen to them, like the way they play and their talents, it's actually great musicianship and great songwriting. Even though it's silly and goofy, it's about like having sex and stuff. It's super well done. And I kind of contrast that with, and this is probably gonna get me a lot of hate, with Weird Al. Weird Al is funny, but his stuff is so corny that it's just a joke. You know, there's not really like a lot of musicianship in it. Oh my God. I can't believe I'm saying this. I do like the guy personally. I think he's a really funny, nice guy. And a lot of people have great stories about him, but you know, his songs are literally just like the real song. And then he just kind of put some goofy lyrics on it. While with Tenacious D, they're actually like writing new melodies and doing all kinds of cool stuff. And a band that fits in that category too, that I had in the beginning of the show, is Ween. Although I don't think that they're a joke band, and I've had debates with other people about this, whether they're a joke band who happens to make good music, whether they're just a good band that happens to be kind of funny. My headcanon of what I think is going on is I think that they are a little insecure with how talented they are, and so they kind of hide behind the jokes. That's my psychobabble jaywalk take on it, is that they're just kind of hiding behind the funny parts so that, you know, just like what girls used to do in photos, remember the duck face move? Is that if you put on, you know, a goofy exterior, it's much easier to hide any sort of realness inside. This is also a great tip for life, guys. It's worked for me for 32 years, is just pretend that you're joking about things that matter to you. And then, you know, if someone agrees with you, you're like, all right, it's the same trick that we all pulled where, you know, you tell someone, wouldn't it be funny if we made out? wouldn't that be funny if we just like started kissing and stuff, just as a gag? Maybe we could make out. And you just sort of, you know, feel it out. And then that way, if they totally reject you, you can just be like, oh, just kidding. That was just a joke. So that's my theory with Ween. Is that they are they're so talented but a little insecure about how good they are, so it's a joke, but probably not. So I think what most people will argue with me on the other end is that they're just a really good band that happens to make, you know, funny stoner like jokes. So probably that, but I really like Ween. I got into them right before I moved to California, and I'm glad I found a good episode to put them in the show without their permission. Sorry, guys, please don't sue me. So I'm not going to go into the news with the protesting and the rioting and all that. I'm not going to go into news with the protests and about my white privilege, because there's plenty of white women to tell you how to feel about black people. That's what I've gathered so far in social media. Is thank God for Jessica's and Karen's and Megan's to tell a honky like me what black people want me to do to make the world a better place. Thank you so much, ladies. See, I had a really lazy weekend this weekend. I got a double bacon cheeseburger and gnawed it out like I was on heroin while I was eating it. It was such a good feeling. I don't know if you ever have that. They call it the itis. It's like a carbohydrate shock, but if you were to see me like in my room, it would look like I was like nodding off on some good like Fent or something, because I'm just like literally like eating the cheeseburger and then like being like, oh dude, I got to get ready for a nap. I got to get my bed ready. I got to get in there, take a nice little nap. And my cat, of course, joined me for the nap. It's our favorite thing to do together. She's getting a little heavy, which sucks, but is adorable. And it's so goddamn hard to stop a cat. It's so goddamn hard to stop a cat from getting fat. All you have to do is like not feed them as much, but she just gives me this look like, give me a break, you motherfucker. Like just come on. Like, you know, it's, you know, I got a 30 pound bag of cat food that just stares her in the face, and I'm trying to like, you know, push a little out here and there. And I should just label off like a cupful that I need, just do that throughout the day. But, you know, she just looks at me and she has this move where whenever she's like hungry and wants to get my attention, she'll be really, really fucking sweet. She's figured me out so well. She's figured me out. She's like, the way to get Justin to do things for me is just to be like super, super fucking nice. So anytime like I'm laying in bed, and she loves to pull this shit too, right? Whenever I'm falling asleep or something like that, she'll come sneak in my bed and then start like licking my face and doing the biscuits, the making biscuits move on me, which is super adorable. And I just know, I'm like, oh, hungry, needs some food. So go feed her. So yeah, I got a little chunky cat, a little chunkster. Gonna have to put her on Kitty Slim Fast soon. Yeah. You know, take her on a walk or something. She spends all of her time outside. I always thought that was going to be what would keep her from being overweight, but she just lays around outside. Let's be honest. She's not out there like jogging and shit. She's doing exactly what she would do inside, just in the nice Santa Barbara sun out here. I got this ridiculous new mic windscreen. I'm going to hopefully do some outside interviews with people. Half the reason why is because of this horrible virus, and the second reason is I have no interior square footage. So I've been coming up with a system where I can have like people on my patio and you know, give them a microphone that's windproof and stuff. So I got these ridiculous looking what they're called dead cats. It literally looks like a dead cat. It's like this big furry mess of a microphone I have now that I'm talking into. It's a little bit silly. It'll get the job done outside, I hope. But you hear that right there? That, I don't know. I'm having some doubts about this. This is what happens whenever you buy something for $5, is it's supposed to like get rid of that blowing sound, but it's still there. And even in my P's and B's, you can hear it a little bit. So might have to return this junk, or, you know, just keep it just for the hilarious value of it. I'll post a picture somewhere of it. It's pretty damn silly. So, the meat of this episode is going to be advice that I wish I knew whenever I was younger. I'm really like giving away like the best content that I have to think of. I'm running out of ideas fast too. Holy shit. Like, a lot of the stuff that I'm recording today, like, was like this weekend, like coming up with it. And I have a good system now where I'll just wake up and I'll put on some music, maybe do something to open up take some sort of unnamed plant substance that might make me think of funnier ideas, but not be able to execute them on the microphone because it makes me all nervous and scared. So I did that this weekend, and like I said, it's I have a whole list of stuff in this OneNote that I've been kind of using in the episodes, and it's getting a little bit thin. But this one I've wanted to talk about for a while, and that is advice that I wish I told myself when I was younger. And probably the biggest one, and every time I see pictures of myself back in the day, I wish I could go back in time and say, dude, this is like the best you're going to look. Like, you look amazing. Like, you know, I think whenever you're younger, probably with everyone, you know, you're so afraid that you're ugly and that you are not like attractive. And I felt that. I've always felt that my whole life. I hate getting my picture taken since I was old enough to be self-aware since of other people's opinions of me. There's all kinds of beautiful pictures of me as a little child whenever I didn't care. And I even used to take videos of me and my friends and stuff with a video camera. That's how fucking old I am. With a VHS video camera, we would take videos of our friends. This is like proto TikTok way back in the day. But then once I got a little bit older, I hate getting my picture taken. And I always thought that I just was like cursed to like just have a gross face and a stupid tone of voice. And I was always kind of a little chubby my whole life. I always have been. It's in my genes. I'm sorry. I'm never going to have 6-pack abs. Like, it's not going to happen. But you know, I still look back at like pictures of myself and I'm like, holy shit, dude, like you look like a fucking Backstreet Boy. Like, I really did. For the episode picture, I have one of my high school photos. I look like a fucking Backstreet Boy. Like, you know, like there was no, I would have no problem. Like, if I had the brains that I had now and that kind of like youthful look, like I would be unstoppable. And I think a lot about, you know, dating in high school and stuff. And I did okay. I know people did a lot worse. But it was like, I had no idea, you know, that, and I sometimes like, you know, I'll catch up with girls I went to school with later. Not a lot. I'm not about to like lie and say that everyone thought I was hot and then I left. But if you were like, yeah, I thought you were super cute, you just, you know, you're just shy and kind of weird. So, you know, it just, that's something I think about a lot, you know. And to people who are younger than me, and even if you're the same age, I'm sure I'm going to say the same thing whenever I'm like 60 and looking at myself in my 30s, is that you will look back in the future and think, what wasted fucking youth. Like, what wasted looks. You know, I was so self-conscious and so scared to approach girls at all, and I was a fucking smoke show. Like, I was melt in your mouth handsome whenever I was in high school, and I should have taken advantage of it. So that's number one, is I wish I could have told myself like how goddamn sexy I was back then. So the next one is that 3% of adults have an idea of what they're doing. I should put that another way. 97% of adults have no fucking idea what they're doing. You do not just grow up and then magically turn into this adult who can like do stuff and make things happen. What you'll realize is even your teachers, even the ones you looked up to and thought had it together, only 3% did. That's the math I've done through my own experience and talking to other people, is it's about 3% of adults are competent with everything. Like, you can count on them, they'll get stuff done. Otherwise, they're just as bad as children. They're just as bad about delivering, about being honest, about, you know, just living life in general. And they're like still kids. They're still like fucking kids who need to be told what to do and where to go. They don't have that magical, like adult responsibility, like tuned in. Like, we just don't have it. That's a myth. A few people do. And the smart among us pick those people and hang on to them for dear life and hope that they will guide us and be the leaders that we need them to be. But the rest of us are just hopelessly lost. So, you know, I think, you know, a lot of teenagers have way like overblown egos about what they know, what they think. And the sad thing is that they're probably right about like 97% of the time. Now you should respect the other 3%. And even people who are fuck ups do have great advice, except it's the opposite way, you see. It's not every mentor that God will put into your life is a mentor to follow. There are some people that will be put in your life, they will be put there as a cautionary tale. They're perfectly fine people, but they are, and you know who I'm talking about. There are people who will be put in your life as a caution to say, don't do that, Bart. You know, stay in this, don't get into that. And those people are very valuable as well. So just look out for that, is that most adults have no idea what the hell they're doing. About 3% do. And there are both good and bad mentors, and you should listen to both of them for very different reasons. Probably the other one, and this is something that even now I struggle with a lot, and if I were to go to therapy, it would probably be this, is that you are the boss of your life in every single way. It's your grades and your parents and all that. That is what, you know, you use as sort of like a guide of what you're doing and how you're doing right. And, you know, whenever I kind of moved out and stopped going to school and stuff, that still now is like a weird thing I have to like get used to, is that like I'm accountable to no one now. You know, it used to be whenever I was like in school, I had to worry every 6 weeks about the grades, like the grades, like, oh fuck, I got to have a good grade. I have to do this and this so I can get this fucking grade so that, you know, my parents will be happy. And then, you know, keep on doing that. And then even past that, you know, I feel pressure all the time in my life, you know, to get like a bigger place or to like give a damn about forming a long-term relationship with a woman. You know, like a lot of these come from this feeling that even at 30, it's not like out of my system yet, that I have to do this for my family and my parents. Like I have to like make them happy. And, you know, you have that like so much in your life that you have to do things to make other people happy with how you're doing. And it's like this weird sort of cycle where, you know, you're doing something to make someone else, to make your parents happy. And then at the end of the day, you know, they're trying to instill this fear to not fuck up, so you make your own life happy. But, you know, once you move out, once you're on your own, you're accountable to no one but yourself at all. Like you know, I think it kind of freaks out my grandparents sometimes and my parents whenever they talk to me. You've gotten over it now, but in the first few years of kind of being an adult and on my own, you know, like they would tell me stuff like what to do and like, oh, you should get this or that. And like, I could be like, okay, I'm not going to do that though. You know, like you can just say no, and there's not a goddamn thing you can do about it. And, you know, that's actually like really, really freeing with your parents. At least in my family, it's really freeing with my older parents. I have a very honest household. If you can't tell by the way I'm doing this podcast and stuff, is that I believe in speaking your mind, and my parents and family are the exact same way, to a limit. Like whenever I was a kid and under their roof, I followed their rules. I didn't use the naughty words. I, you know, didn't smoke the reefer. Ah! Sorry, not supposed to say that word. You know, I did all that. But then once I'm out, you know, I'm on my own income and shit, and like, you know, it's in my own roof. They're just suggestions now in my life, and like it's really nice to be able to like talk to my dad as like an adult, and you know, say, these are the problems I have. Here are my plans to get through them. If you'd like to give some advice, you can. And he'll still like, you know, like yell at me about, you got to find a way to make money. That's, no matter what side of the spectrum my folks are on, it's always the one thing that they're always so concerned with me. I think they cannot believe that I have a way to make money without like going to a job and work, without having to sell drugs or something. Cause it's, even at 32, like they're always like super worried that I'm just like living under a bridge or something because I don't have a traditional job. I'm a freelancer. I've been freelancing since like I was like 21. I haven't had a real job since I was 21 years old. I haven't had a job where I actually had to go get a paycheck and like show up like a 9-to-5. I was a teacher's aide back then. whenever I was 21, I was a teacher's aide, and that was the last time. And it actually was a tactical move because they laid me off after the first semester, like with no like warning and no like debate about it and no appeal. And I worked my ass off to help those kids. I worked with special needs students, and I really, really cared about the job a lot. And then there was all these like all this politics going on in the back scene where because I didn't have a formal degree, a lot of the other teachers, even though I wasn't technically a teacher, I was a teacher's assistant, a lot of these other teachers were very upset because they thought that I was like making like 60 grand a year. And just whenever I was just 20, 21 years old and I didn't go to college. And that's, I kept on hearing all this like fucking rumors, like these grown ass like adults who were my teachers were like in the lunchroom, like telling little rumors about me that, you know, that, oh, I'm just like I'm the superintendent's pet. That's what they thought. They thought I was just like the superintendent of the school, just really liked me, which she did. I was a very, very lovable kid. Okay. And especially because I looked like such a goofy stoner and I still kind of am. Yet I cared about my schoolwork and, you know, was on time and did all that kind of stuff. I just chose not to go to college because I went to tour some and they were like, oh, well, you know, you're going to pay, let's see, like 100 grand. And then you're going to relearn all of this stuff that you're already teaching people and doing for a living. And, yeah, you get to, like live in a dorm and like drink beer and stuff too. And so what I did was I just got a little apartment next to the college and just drank kegs and stuff, for a fraction of the cost. So that's why I never went to school, but there was a lot of drama whenever I was a teacher. So they gave me the boot, and they even told me I wasn't allowed to get emotional about it. That was like the weirdest part too, is that like my teacher, who's a good friend of mine now, one of my biggest mentors too, but you know, she like preempted me whenever I got the news and was like, don't make a big deal about this, Justin, like just pack up your stuff and go, because if you make any sort of like fuss about this, it's going to be problems for all of us. I was just like, holy shit, I'm so done with this. I'm so done with having like a boss in a corporation like decide my fate in a whim and then tell me I can't even be upset about it. So once that happened, I've worked by myself ever since. I've done graphic design work. I taught myself how to do graphic design work. I use my video editing skills to work on a ton of projects, and now it's podcasting. So that's sort of the last, in a long story short, the thing I would tell myself when I was younger is that prepare to be your boss. You know, it's impressing mom and dad, impressing the school, impressing anyone is a joke. Psychedelic drugs really help with this, by the way. They really help you to understand that, like, caring what other people think about you is like one of the biggest waste of times ever. It's something that we get so wrapped up in, of what strangers, especially fucking strangers, you know, that we care what they think about us. It's a waste of time. It's good in small doses so you can be a normal, rational human being when you need to. But for the most part, who the fuck cares what other people think? So this week, I'm not going to go over any video games because I've exhausted all three that I play. That would be Kerbal Space Program, Fallout 4, and Def Gun. That's pretty much it. Maybe if I find a new one, I'll talk about it. And movie-wise, I haven't been watching too many movies, but I thought I would talk about a filmmaker, someone who I've looked up to for a very long time. I have his book called My Boring-Ass Life. I have two copies of it, because it's so good, and my family and friends knew I wanted it and gave me the same one twice, and I don't mind. One's a hardcover, one's soft. So, you know, Kevin Smith sort of started the whole indie movement in the 90s with a certain person who we will not talk about anymore, a certain producer of Miramax who got in a lot of trouble recently, but they... This is already a terrible way to start off his career. Okay, Harvey Weinstein aside, Kevin Smith was inspired actually by Austin, Texas. He was inspired by the movie Slackers. He saw it in movie theater whenever he was going to film school and said, or I believe it was before film school, but he saw this movie and he said, you can make a movie that simply like, I'm going to fucking make a film. You know, all I need is one location and a camera and some of my friends. He was inspired by that to make his own movie the same way. I was too, by the way. I thought the same thing whenever I saw Clerks and actually the movie Go. Whenever I remember watching the movie Go and thinking, that's an easy fucking movie to shoot. I could totally do that myself. And I made a film, but it did not take me to Sundance, unfortunately, like Kevin Smith said with Clerks. So he made Clerks, and it's such an honest movie, and his writing for people is very cool. It's really hard to do dialogue, even with my penis sketch in the beginning of the show. I decided I needed to write down the dialogue for it. Probably wasn't that good, but if I try to do stuff off the top of my head, I have a tendency to go, and I'm actually going to get like a plaque or something in here that says, do not say, or that's something in my head I'm trying so hard not to do. But one thing that stops that is having good writing. And that's what Kevin Smith had. He had good writing, and he also had a very, unique voice. You know, he had that kind of like Snoochy Boochy, Jay and Silent Bob, like an interesting character and take. And with the rest of his movies, like Mallrats, in Dogma, they just fit into that sort of do-it-yourself director, sort of cool slacker 90s look. So I've always loved that. I love Mallrats, one of my favorite movies, Dogma. You know, I haven't really seen Chasing Amy in a long time. I don't even remember that movie. But Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back is hilarious. And he had a classic kind of story, not quite a downfall, but kind of a downgrade. In my opinion, and like I said, I love this guy on a personal level. Like I love his book and I love his attitude. He does a lot of great podcasts now and spoken word stuff. But can we all be honest that his movies are not that good anymore? they're just not. And they started to sort of kind of come down, I think, like right after Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. That would have been a great last movie for him. That would be cool. You know, it's kind of like what Tarantino wants to do. Tarantino wants to only make 10 movies. And so that's kind of tight because like his next one, he has 9 so far. So it'll be the next one he does. Like, that's my swan song. But with Kevin Smith, I mean, Hollywood wants to make money and people like him. And he has such a great personality with people that he makes friends with everyone, you know, with your Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. And, you know, all of these like stars just love him as a guy. And that helps a lot whenever you have no money to make movies. So right around like, you know, Jay and Silent Bob, you know, he made Geely and then like Jersey Girl, and they just weren't that good. And, you know, and in his book, it's kind of heartbreaking because, you know, he was feeling like he just did not have the same sort of freshman energy that you see with the musicians a lot too. Have you ever noticed like your favorite band, like their first album, like just kicks major ass, and then like the second one kind of sucks? That's called a sophomore slump. And it is like almost unavoidable with artists. I can't think of anyone who's, maybe the Beatles. The Beatles kind of got over that. But once you go from like just struggling to survive and to give people your art, and you just are fighting just tooth and nail to have it, whenever Hollywood or whoever just shows up and says, dude, you're done. Like, we're gonna pay you 6 figures a year. You can do whatever you want. That fighting stuff is gone. He actually talks about in his book, he actually blurs out the name of the movie because at the time it was being released and he couldn't talk about it, but it was Zach and Miri Make a Porno. He was working on Zach and Miri Make a Porno. And during that time, whenever that was coming out, we were really big on the Judd Apatow. That was whenever Judd Apatow was like killing it with comedies. Like he was like the funny comedian director that everyone wanted to have a part of. And so, you know, Kevin Smith was trying to come up with a funny movie, something that audiences now at the time, or the audience at the time would like. So he came up with Zach and Miri Make a Porno, and it did not do well. And he had, you know, so much of the cast, like Seth Rogen and some other folks were basically Judd Apatow people. And there was a sinking suspicion, if you watch that film, that this is just trying to be a Judd Apatow flick and Kevin Smith's name is on it. And in the book, he actually admits that. There's a, in one of the other version of the book that I have that I got later is actually has a revised, has an extra chapter talking about after the movie came out. And he talks about how he is really disappointed in himself because he was just trying to make a Judd Apatow movie, like confession, like not even a theory anymore. He admits, he said, I thought, Judd Apatow's funny. I need to make a Judd Apatow movie. And so that's what he tried to do. And it didn't work out well. And he also has this great part talking about it, about how whenever he was writing it, you know, the movie is centered around two people who suddenly like can't pay their bills anymore and have to make a porno. And he said something that's so honest and true. He said, I haven't known what it's like to not be able to pay my bills since the early 90s. it's like since like Clerks became a thing, like I've been rich. I've been a fucking rich guy. And so I'm trying to like write this like stoner, like slacker material whenever I got a big ass mansion in Hollywood and everything I could ever want. You know, I don't know what it's like to not pay a bill. So it was cool that he admitted that, but you could definitely feel it in the movie that it was just a little hollow, especially the whole, like, you know, them like not paying their bills and how they deal with it. I mean, I know a lot of fucking poor people. I have never ran into someone broke who like literally like didn't have water and heat yet still had rent. I don't get that. Like, you know, that because like the, it starts with them like getting up and like trying to go to the bathroom with like a tiny bit of water and stuff. And it was written like someone who has no idea how poor people actually live. But you know, he admitted it, and something that happened on that movie set that would forever kind of change his creative output, in my opinion, in the downward direction is something that I enjoy too. And that is weed. Ah, he started smoking weed. Ah! I'm going to quit that joke. That's stupid. He started smoking weed, with Seth Rogen, of course, on the set of the movie. And he never really smoked before then, shockingly. And I know a friend like this in high school who made a lot of stoner like comics and stuff and never smoked weed. It was just like, it was just a comedic tool. He just thought it was funny. Like bongs and stoners are funny, and they are. So he, you know, just like Kevin Smith, never smoked. And so Kevin Smith started smoking regularly with Seth Rogen and came to the realization that my grandfather has, which is that he has no reason not to be high anymore. Like he has all the money he wants and all the creative like control that he could want. He can just blaze it 24/7, baby. So that has become his life now. It's all he talks about is getting stoned. And he's also transitioned more towards, you know, being a spoken word podcaster and doing kind of stand-up specials, which are hilarious. I love them. But on the movie front, you know, frankly, I think that was the final like comfort zone that has just turned off his creativity. I think he also realized just kind of how crazy rabid his fan base is, and that really he can make anything he wants and they'll pay money to watch it, which sucks, you know. You know, on one hand, I respect that a lot. You know, he just cares about his fans and kind of like me with this podcast, kind of does whatever the hell he wants now. But it's just a weird relationship. It's like everything he does now is like a home movie, kind of. It just has a feeling like it was just done, like because he was stoned and has millions of dollars to just throw at stupid ideas like Walrus and the Yoga Hosers movie. God, that movie's so bad. It's not even funny. Like, and he loves his daughter. He has a daughter now who's old enough to be in the pictures, and he puts her in everything. And he shamelessly says, I don't give a fuck what you think about her performance or that I always put her in stuff now. She's my daughter and I love him. And once again, I respect that, Kevin Smith. You know, that's how you should be as a dad. But it's not entertaining. You know, it's not, she's not like naturally funny like he is, and is really just shoved in to roles that like don't need to be her. I wonder how she must feel on the other end of that. Like, I wonder like how much of it is her being like supportive of her dad, how much of it is, you know, trying to get like a career out of this. I don't know. Yoga Hosers was done with her and her friend who was Johnny Depp's daughter. And just that alone, you're like, oh yeah, this was totally not made just so our daughters have a movie. We really wanted to make a funny movie for you guys. And like in the end, and I unfortunately watched a lot of this and the end credits are basically just out of his podcast. He's like stoned on his podcast talking about, man, we should be funny if we made like a Clerks, but it was with like chicks in Canada. We call it Yoga Hosers, just laughing about it. And yeah, it was funny conversation piece, but not that good of a movie. So, you know, the combination of the sophomore slump, the marijuana use, and just being spoiled with fans who just fucking love whatever he does and will pay the money to see it no matter what, in my opinion, has not been for the best of his filmmaking abilities. And the last one I did see is the Jay and Silent Bob reboot, which was released in theaters privately, which is really cool. He actually just did like a tour and then charged $100 a ticket, and you could go and see him and the movie. And it sold out like fucking crazy. That's one cool thing about it, is that he made so much money doing that without having to fuck around with the theaters, having to fuck around with distributors. He just said, I'm going to straight up take this thing on tour. I'm going to charge $100 a ticket, and I'm going to sell at every theater I put it in. And he did. I actually didn't get to see it for a long time because he was kind of adamant on that process. But if I was in the audience watching this and my boy Kevin Smith was there, I would have the time of my life, to be honest. Like, it would be such a fun fucking night in seeing his movie. The movie is very meta. It's very kind of in your face that Kevin Smith made this movie as a goof. And that, you know, just every criticism of him is like mocked and like maybe taken on too far with jokes. And he has a ton of celebrity cameos, which he admits in the movie and in real life are just doing it because he fucking nearly died of a heart attack. And so now they all feel bad for him. And we're like, oh yeah, we'll be in your movie. And thanks to modern technology, they don't even have to be in the same scene together, which is so shitty and lame. Like almost all the scenes with like celebrities, especially like really big ones who aren't actors, Chong is in it and stuff. They're clearly shot on a green screen and then like with just the actor. So they basically called up Chong and they're like, hey, just come to the studio for 30 minutes and read these lines and you're out. And then we'll get another actor in. And then they just kind of piece them together and post. I know what you're doing, Kevin Smith. Okay. I know what you're doing. But good for you that you got all these people together to make the film, or as you call it, the flick. And like I said, it's not that good. You know, just watching it without being in an audience full of Kevin Smith fans and with Kevin Smith, it's corny in bad ways. And the actor, it's just fan service. The entire movie is, hey, are you a Kevin Smith fan? Look, it's so-and-so from Mallrats. Look, here's that person from Chasing Amy. Oh, look, you know, we got all these people back, and that's it. And then, of course, his daughter is the star of the movie, which he even fucking admits in the movie is just something that he does because he can fucking do it. So, you know, it's tough to see, you know, artists that you really care about kind of accept that they're bad or that they are not going to try anymore. I mean, I guess you know, you can't all be like, you know, Leonardo da Vinci your whole time. But if Kevin Smith is listening to this, try one more time. Just get an alias. That's what I would do if I was him. I would get like a total alias. Like I would do like a ghostwriting on myself. Write a script that has your name not anywhere on it and really get true critique from it. You know, you can even use some of your Hollywood friends to see if you can make it, but don't just make it because you can. Make it because it's good. But I love you, Kevin Smith. And if I ever get a chance to meet you, I'm going to give you a big old hug because you're a very honest and cool dude, and I love your book. Just make better movies, please. Well, that's my show. And the good news is we are on episode 4, which means that we are halfway through my big milestone, which is 8 episodes. All I got to do is make this thing to 8 episodes and I'll be very, very happy, because statistically, most podcasts end after 7. So I'm going to go right above the bare minimum. I'm going to celebrate like crazy on my 8th. And if you hate this show, you just got 4 more to listen to. I've also upgraded my social media game. I have an Instagram now. It is Lower Your Expectation Podcast. If you're one of my friends, I've already started inviting you to it, probably. And as always, you can find me on Facebook, Lower Your Expectation. It's a fun little page you can see, and I can see all of your nice engagements and post views to better craft future episodes. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or guest ideas, or just want to talk to me because you're bored and lonely, you can email me, loweryourexpectationpodcast@gmail.com. It's Lower Your Expectation, no S. The S was taken. So with that, I bid you adieu. I hope you have a great rest of your week. But before you go...
Excuse me, Mr. X. Hi. I've read some of your speeches, and I honestly believe that a lot of what you have to say is true. And I'm a good person in spite of what my ancestors did. I wanted to ask you, what can a white person like myself, who isn't prejudiced, what can I do to help you and further your cause?
Nothing.
We're done here, it's a wrap. Champion, talk this one, man. Boom down.